Senator Kelly, Senator Ray, and I, Vic Fisher, are present. Today, we will have an overview of the Department of Administration with emphasis on certain personnel aspects of operations and mission and run. So we say you're welcome, as always.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Lisa Rudd. I'm the Commissioner of Administration, and I'm very happy that we have this opportunity to introduce to you some of the programs of the Department of Administration, particularly in the areas of personnel management. The heads of the divisions of labor relations, personnel, EEO, and retirement and benefits are here to discuss their programs in details with detail with you. These divisions are all under the supervision and the human resources in the Department of Administration. These divisions are critical to the functioning of all parts of state government, and we're proposing to you some changes in the functioning of these divisions to make them work more efficiently and better for all of state government. They impact the way in which a great deal of the state's budget is spent, particularly in the personal services area. Of course, the personnel and labor relations divisions are responsible for the responsible spending of a large percentage of the state's payroll. We have, for the fiscal year 1985, out of about one half, goodness, I don't even know how to read that. It's 0.047% of the overall departmental budget is going to go to these four divisions, which are really responsible for a huge portion of the state's operating budget. I'd like to introduce to you Deputy Commissioner Andrews, who will give you a little bit more detail about the various divisions, and then let the heads of those divisions give you a more detailed review of their programs. You have, I believe, the information that we gave you before the hearing. So Deputy Commissioner Andrews can step forward, if that's all right with you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, please, I want to go ahead and at least say people, would you like to remain up to the hearing?
Thank you, Commissioner Rudd and Chairman Fisher. I'm glad to be here today because I think that we're doing some really positive things in the Department of Administration as far as coordinating all of the activities of the Human Resources Division. In my association with state government, I found often that the divisions of personnel, labor relations, retirement, and EEO were working under their specific statutory or policy authority and not always working together for a very comprehensive approach to human resource management in state government. I think that we have a very dedicated team of professionals working for us now. We have regular meetings, and we send the information out to all operating departments. We're responsible for setting trends in human resources management for state government. And as you know, many of the state's political subdivisions look towards state government for doing very positive and innovative things in personnel and labor relation and administration of retirement benefits. So we look forward to working with your committee and the committee in the House to explain to you what we're doing and our new approaches to human resource management. Barry Best, our director of EEO, is new to the administration, the newest one in the human resources component. Ken Humphreys has a long history with state government. He previously worked in the legislature. Frank Ray has a long history in personnel management. He's previously from the Alaska court system. And Bruce Ludwig, our acting director of labor relations, has been a professional in that field with the state of Alaska for over 6 or 7 years. They've given you handouts that speak specifically to budget and some of the things that they're working on. What they'd like to do today is spend maybe 5 to 10 minutes giving you more information on their programs and then be open to questions that you may have from them. The first person that's going to talk to you today is Frank Ray, the director of personnel.
Frank, it's good to have you with us.
Thank you.
I hope you won't snow us with too much additional paper.
Well, I apologize. I may have feared I'd be overkilling in the paper, and I misunderstood the audience here.
But there was a rumor out that this was a joint hearing with the House.
Yes.
And it is not so because the House people are otherwise occupied.
Briefly, let me start out by saying that the Division of Personnel, of which I'm the director, I'm sorry for the record, Frank Ray, director of the Division of Personnel. The Division of Personnel consists of approximately 70 employees in three locations. 13 employees are located in the Anchorage Personnel Office. 53 in the Fairbanks office, and the remaining 54 in the Juneau office. The division is divided into four sections. They consist of classification and pay, recruitment and examining, records and certifications, and training. Those are basically the four sections of the division. I would ask if you would take a look at these little blue folders that I've got. All it is just an outline of some of the items I'd like to touch on this afternoon. As I understand it, you were interested in some of the changes that have occurred in the division, and specifically how these changes affect women and minorities. Is that correct?
With respect to my own interests, I also want to know sort of how outreach works and what is being done to review jobs, particularly in terms of opening more jobs up to entry personnel. I've always had a question about over-professionalization of requirements for positions that maybe don't require the kind of professional certificates and educational attainment that usually stands behind so many of the job qualifications.
If I may, Senator, let me go through this, and if I haven't touched upon any specific areas, maybe we can come back. First, one of the changes that has been made is the elimination of many of the written examinations. When I first took this position a year ago, there were about 90 written tests. Of those 90, only about 15 have been validated. Those non-validated tests have been done away with.
What does validated mean?
Validated means that it is a test can be validated when it is scientifically shown to test what it reports to test, purports to test. And that these are things that must be accomplished in the court for each individual test. So we validate tests with the assumption that upon good validation, it will stand up in court.
Mr. Chairman. You mean all of these tests that you've eliminated are all gone for good?
They're all gone in the form that they were in for good, absolutely.
So what do you use now in place of the test for knowledge?
Mr. Chairman, what we do is we evaluate on the basis of what we call training and experience. And that is, the evaluation is made of applicants' length of experience and level of experience as needed in their application forms.
So for personnel officer 1, 2, 3, and 4, you would start as a personnel officer 1, and the only way to get training experience to be a 2 would be just to be a 1, or would you be a 2 somewhere else? Once you get the job, aren't you locked in forever? As excluding somebody just coming out of college, for example?
No, the training experience is jargon for personnel, the way they evaluate applications. That means that you can become a personnel officer 1, 2, or 3 if you have a certain level of experience over a certain period of time. And those requirements are published in each recruitment bulletin. It does not have to be experience with the state. It can be with any agency or any private company. So you're not locked in to specific state experience.
Is that correct? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ray, I noticed the effective date of September 30th, you have administrative officers 1, 2, and 3. They were eliminated. And then over on December 15th, you have administrative assistant. Now, is that 1, 2, and 3, is that the same thing, or is that something
different? Administrative assistant. I mean, Mr. Chairman, the administrative assistant senator is a lower level in the administrative officer. It's a career ladder.
What's taking the place of the administrative officer? Is there anything? Is that just done?
The examinations, the written tests were done away with. And again, as I explained to Senator Kelly, that was substituted by evaluations of experience and education.
Same way with purchasing agents and some of those, right?
Now, as we obtain more resources within by validated tests, and we are in the process of doing that now. But it would it's not reasonable to ask people to take non-validated tests.
What that means is that tests that were eliminated were considered not to establish establish the qualifications for a job.
Yes. In other words, it's a test that we're used and not scientifically, but based on the duties performed by employees in those jobs.
We might as well get right down to it, right? We have had a confrontation going for some time about closing of the recruitment or closing the registers, right? And I just wonder, perhaps you could help me now and tell me what we've done now. What is your final determination? Our argument is that I felt that everybody is entitled to an equal opportunity to take a test because you never know, the next guy down the street might have like a higher score or as high a score as somebody who's already on the register. I can understand your point of it. If there's no need for the people, why fool around with it? But is it possible that you've reached some kind of a mechanism by when you anticipate a job is going to come open, but then you only have a limited amount of time and certainly can't broadcast throughout the state or advertise throughout the state when those registers come open. So really you're just, again, coming from a limited amount of people. Those people who are in state personnel already, that's number one priority, right? People who are on the register now, and then anybody that might become aware of it during whatever advertising period they have, and I don't know, in what period, what do you do, 2 weeks advertising?
A month, 30 days.
30 days.
May I point out that there is a criteria listed in the Section 3 of this little handout. Perhaps we can get to that in just a moment. And when we look at that, maybe we'll be able to have some of these questions answered.
We aren't arguing among ourselves, frankly. You understand that it's just a philosophical difference.
I understand.
It's one that I guess coming from the legislative branch and supposedly representing a constituency where you are in a management and have certain guidelines that you have to go by. And I just don't know how we're going to reconcile it. Really.
Let me see if I understand. The reason we originally went to written test was to avoid favoritism and cronyism and stuff like that. So you set up a civil service system, and you went to written tests, and that's why you went top 3 on that. Now, we're going to send it back to the old system if one wants to choose to play it that way. Then, now you are ranked by what somebody else thinks of you, and it all depends on who's doing the thinking about you.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, the reason it's out here that we had to move away from these written tests was because of court decisions which require public agencies to use validated testing methods. To continue to use non-validated testing methods is to extend the liability of the state against court action, and we have no defense for using non-validated tests.
Let me see if I can explain it. The registers are now closed for new people who want to come in, yet if you're a classified state employee now, you can continue to apply and be upgraded. Is that somewhat?
About half the classifications are temporarily closed for recruitment because of lack of need. Maybe we should just skip this and get right into that part since there seems to be so much interest.
What are you skipping?
I'm skipping the changes in ranking is what I was going to skip, which just... However, if you'd like, Senator, I'll go through it. Your pleasure.
I just don't go through it.
Okay.
All right. It's only 2 pages.
Okay. Thank you. One of the changes that we accomplished during our first year here is the way that we count employees. When I arrived here on a list, people who were tied for a particular score, there were 5 people tied for first place, and the next person was called number 6. And if you look at this yellow page, changes in ranking, you'll see that on the left-hand side is the former ranking in the right-hand column. But the next column on the left is the new ranking. But if you notice that under the
form... That doesn't seem very significant.
Okay.
That's
what
I can move
on.
Senator, the reason it does become significant is that it allows a greater applicant pool.
Right.
And that's one of my goals as well. If you would like then to go, now we're in the pink section, the getting recruitment needs. The division of personnel of its recruitment under the following conditions: projected inadequate numbers of of applicants, new job classes, whenever new job classes are introduced, whenever minimum qualifications are changed, and then when actual needs are expressed by the departments. When lists have been worked unsuccessfully, that means there have not been enough interest in available candidates, or that there are insufficient applicants for a particular location, or to overcome underutilization, which has to do with our affirmative action program. If you look on the next page, there's a personnel memorandum that I sent out in November of last year, which indicates those particular criteria which would be used in opening recruitment.
Mr. Chairman, maybe if I follow these for a minute and see if we have it right. Let's say we're under the old written test. Or any way you do it, you're going to be scored. Right, let's say you have 50 people scored from, say, 100 to 75. And but you only have one or two jobs pop up occasionally. Right, so you start from the top and you pick up one here and you keep going on down to the list. Right, say it would take 10 positions to get to that list, and that might take 2 or 3 years, but in the meantime, there's somebody sitting out there that could score 100 on the test or 90 on the test that conceivably is never going to have a chance, and you're finally get down to where somebody that just scored 65 or 60 is going to get the job because you never thought that person was going to score the 95 to take the test.
Exactly. There is that argument, Senator. That's a valid argument, but I'd like to, if I may, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to point out that there's an argument on the other side, too. That is, when we receive a lot of complaints of the division of personnel. We receive complaints from the position that you articulated. We also receive complaints from people who say, I have been on that list for 2 years. No one ever called. No one ever wrote me. Is it because I'm a woman? Is it because I'm black? Is it because I don't know anybody? Often the answer is there's been no turnover. So they stayed on the list for 2 years and never were contacted. They have a legitimate complaint also. The question is, which side of this two-edged sword is one fighter?
It's really not the complaints that we're worried about. It's really the quality of state personnel that's at issue here. And if the policy were to close a register and just run it down to the 66% level, while much higher qualified people may be available if the register were open, if we do that and don't give the new people a chance, we in effect decrease the quality of state personnel, and I wouldn't worry who's complaining so long as you have a rational explanation of why you would take the most qualified person, or if most qualified and whatever other criteria may be, if in the rural area you take the person living in the rural area, so whatever policies exist, but sort of the most appropriate person for a given job. Isn't that sort of the ultimate goal?
If you never get on the list, you don't have to worry about them notifying you, do you? Because you're never going to be notified because you never get on the list.
That is the ultimate goal. And that is why when the departments tell us that they feel that there are not enough qualified candidates, we in fact do open it for them.
Do you monitor that?
Yes, we do. We monitor it on a quarterly basis.
Yeah, what do you look at?
We look at the number of people on the... First of all, we respond in two ways. We respond, one, to a request from the departments. If they say to us, there are more qualified people than we have on the list, we want you to open it, we will open it if there seems to be justification. And I've set out the criteria here, the specific ratio of people to positions in turnover. For example, there are many one-position classes where there's no opening until one person leaves the position.
Frank, maybe you should also get into it because I feel privileged because I know that the topic fairly well from the past. You should get into it. Maybe tell them how you're bound statutorily to provide the existing state personnel priority over anybody else that's coming through. And also try to explain how the constitutional requirement of a merit system can, why you don't have competitive advance, so to speak.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, the Senator's absolutely correct. We do have legal requirements repeated in the personnel rules and in the collective bargaining agreements, requiring one of the earlier questions is to give current employees first consideration.
Okay, well, my question is, does that also include the exempt and partially exempt employees?
No, sir.
Well, why doesn't it? Or the question might be.
That's where you can put your sister-in-law, your brother-in-law, your aunt.
Lisa.
If I may expand on that.
They're in California. They're not stupid.
If I may expand on that point as an example, Senator. Recently, I wanted to look at the resume of an exact employee. And it's not in our personal records. The only thing that's in our personal records is the first position. Hiring that employee. There's no background on that employee whatsoever in the personnel records. And I'm sure that employee is a good employee and so on. But there isn't anything in the personnel
records. But following up on the previous question, what is the type of preference that an existing employee gets for an out-of-state position? Is it regardless of qualification or sort of how does that work?
Well, there are several answers to that. First of all, the statutes and the personnel rules require first consideration period. However, subsequent collective bargaining agreements have given applicant or given employee points, so that employees on the basis of longevity are given extra points to get up on the list.
It just seems to me that once you get in, it's hard to get you out. And, I don't know. I don't like the way this is going. There's something wrong with the way we're going.
Well, we recognized this problem some years ago, and then we set up what was known as the Blue Ribbon Commission. And that was what the Blue Ribbon Commission did, is delve into all these things and working in conjunction with the, it wasn't Mr. Ray, then it was another person that not we have, but the Senate Employment Practices Committee, and that's what they were
Are we making any headway?
Well, Senator Fakes and myself are both members of that, and now members in an advisory capacity to the Department Administration in personnel matters, and trying to work together to bring up a classification system to finalize classification.
Well, it just seems to me we treat our state employees well, and we have 385,000 other Alaskans out there, and they should have the opportunity, after going through our schools and our university that we're paying $700 million a year for, they should also have the opportunity to partake in these positions.
Same argument I've taken, and as a legislator, of course, these people as administrators are bound by statutes, and they have to make our thoughts and what we put down work the best way they can. And sometimes it's hard. They have almost an impossible thing. They have in the Constitution that requires a merit system. The state shall operate in our merit system. Then you have an affirmative action, which is not a merit system at all. And then you have existing personnel preference, which is not a merit system at all. You have veterans preference, which is not a merit system at all. So you've contravened the merit system entirely, and collective bargaining in a merit system can't exist together. So, that's, we've been slowly picking away at this thing, trying to alleviate some of the real pressures on it.
Thank you. Are there specific questions that I can answer at this point?
Well, the open recruitment issue, I have personally had that raised with me by all sorts of people who say, well, the register is closed. Do you independently review closed registers to see how long they've been closed?
Yes.
Whether of your own initiative, whether they should be open, sort of how stale
Senator, the business
are.
And I would like to stress that the closed registers is not a permanent situation. It's only a temporary situation. As the registers, as you say, become stale and are reviewed for current interest, because we only want people who are currently available and interested in work. So they're reviewed for that. They're also reviewed for not only currency in that sense, but they're also reviewed to assure that there are sufficient numbers of people in relation to the number of positions. But the main effort that I'm making here, or trying to make, is that we recruit when there's only a real opening. In the past, the registers open all the time. Builds terrible false expectations.
Right. But also doesn't it allows those people with more ability perhaps and more experience to climb above somebody. If you don't keep it open, then you're always going to keep coming down the list, and good qualified people are made out in the cold under the homeless.
Senator, there are many of our registers have scores of people tied with 105 points. Because they receive 100 points in an evaluation and 5 points veterans.
cards, I can't play in the game.
Mr. Chairman, it's not just a false expectation. You will be given an opportunity when there's really a job open.
In a 30-day period, you can advertise. You can't reach the people out there.
Well, Senator, we have been able to provide some new service effective the first of the year. And that is that every time an employee puts in for a state job, if it's closed, we keep their name and address and notify them when it's open.
That's a state employee.
I'm sorry, an applicant.
Well, you and I could argue this ad infinitum. I know that, so they're nice to run in here for each time. I can't believe that you can't come up with something better.
In terms of experience, Frank, since you've been part of this, in how many instances are jobs filled without opening a register to the public?
I can't answer that without research. I can only tell you that it is my belief that that happens very seldom. And if you allow us to talk about expanded certification, we will see, too, that in an effort to recruit women and minorities, it's opening more and more because of that.
I certainly hope to get to that.
That was the point I was going to make. And one of the criteria in the pink memo, as you can see, that Frank laid out for opening the register is what we call underutilization, which is the word that means there are not women or minorities in the position. Or in the case of powerful workers, I suppose, now. As a practical matter, practically every job class in the state is experiencing underutilization, so that almost automatically opens up the register whenever there's an opening.
Great. But when we're trying to move along, there are other people there who will have a chance.
Well, can I ask one question?
Was
he going to explain this? Was he going to explain this? Yeah, my question is,
now, are you actually talking about you now have 10 people left to develop instead of just 5%? That's the expanded certification.
Yes, I'm sorry, Senator, one more time, please.
On this expanded certification, do we have like two separate lists and all 10 of these people, the 5 on each list, are eligible?
This represents, if I may direct the other members' attention to the blue page, this represents the mock-up of one list from which people would be selected or be contacted to see if they're available.
Okay.
The candidates are ranked in the first, or the next to the last column on the right, which is a double traditional top 5. That is how they would be counted. With the expanded certification, the last column on the right would count the other candidates as indicated. I should explain to you that there's a couple of assumptions here. The assumptions are, one, that there's underutilization, both by women and all minorities, and two, that all employees would be interested and available, or all candidates would be interested and available. So you can see that it allows, in this example, consideration of candidates A, I'm using the left-hand column instead of names, and we've number lettered them, A through I, as opposed to the traditional candidate of A through E.
I'd just like to make the comment that I think this is the most blatant discrimination I've ever seen in my life against white males. It is.
Well, Senator,
this is the most blatant thing I've ever seen.
Senator, the law protects all races and all and both sexes, and this, so I don't so you could be specific.
All except the white male here. You got 4 white males that are above everybody, and they aren't even considered.
No, Senator, they would be considered.
Well, that is
this is an expansion.
Well, you expand this on top of it.
Yes.
You put these over in there with them.
Yes.
Oh.
Or you have 10.
Yes. You have 10 instead of 5.
Yes.
Oh, well, all right then. That's fine.
Well, I'm not really a pro agent now, then, is it?
Which one?
Well, now, when you say, like, Hispanic male and half, that doesn't particularly necessarily have to be Hispanic, but that's bigger. A minority male?
Yes. That's the same thing.
Other than Caucasian, right?
You skip the yellow pages, and I'd like to walk through those. What does that refer to?
This refers to a change in the location of some positions. We found that in some cases, departments were indicating that some of their rural positions were in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau. And in fact, they were hiring people from that location and transferring them to the rural areas. When I discovered this, I asked that they, in fact, indicate the actual location. The response, the result was that we had an additional, we have right now an additional 169 positions for which local preference may be made under the statute, which a copy of which is on the next page. So that this is a move to increase local hire and increase hire of minorities.
Has it been effective, or is it just getting going?
It's we'll know better at the end of this season, the end of the summer season, because there are largely seasonal positions.
Okay. It would be good to have feedback. Is this only seasonal, or is this applied to all positions?
This is across the board. The majority of these are seasonal, but not entirely.
What about bilingual issues?
One of the requirements for jobs can be in those positions which require bilingual employees, they can legitimately be included.
And have you done that?
Absolutely.
Do you have a system for notifying residents in rural areas?
We've only been able to adopt that since the first of this year. Mm-hmm. So it still is necessary for all applicants to fill it, to notify us of their interest first.
But you will be developing an outreach program?
We hope to be, absolutely.
Okay.
Can we just talk about this one more time, the blue one in the front?
Okay. Sorry, wait now for the blue.
Suppose we had one position open and the number H was an American Indian female who was a state employee now. Where would you rank then? Because you just get the job. And then you had somebody that's ranked at 82, and people from 99 all the way down to 82. What a member of that.
It's the score in the second column. It would be another assumption. Would include employee credits, I presume, and veterans points and so forth.
That is how this works. The score doesn't count. If you're presently employed, the score doesn't count. The priority income.
No, Senator, that's not accurate. Each candidate is given a score. Mm-hmm. There are two groups of people who are not ranked on the list, and that's rehires and transfers. But they're not ranked. All other people are ranked, including the current employees. And their total final score indicates not only an evaluation of their experience, but longevity points. And so
that's what you're covering on the we're in the score.
Correct.
All right.
Then once you get to expand the list, say A through I, is the hiring or been hiring allowed to choose any one of the candidates?
Yes, sir.
Without giving any reasons or...
Correct.
He can overlook one, two, three, and four, and apply to them.
Correct. They are supposed to give consideration to all, but that consideration does not necessarily mean an interview. Maybe it just merely means looking at their application. One of the advantages and one of my goals is to allow managers a larger pool of applicants from which to choose. And I think this provides that.
I don't know how it fits in with the merit system. We have here the civil merit system. It's competitive tests and nothing counts whether you're quite black, male, female, or anything else. I haven't figured that out yet, but I guess we'll somebody else know.
Well, I would just like to comment that at least skimming the December 22 memo,
yes.
That I certainly think that you're streamlining the procedure here, which I think is very good. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was very cumbersome before.
Mm-hmm. That was our effort. Mine and Ms. Besson, we were talking more about the giving chance.
Is there anything else you want to add?
I would like to talk a moment about some future goals and step down. One of needs, one of my other future goals was is a need to or give applicants orientation. To apply for a state job is at best difficult and lengthy. And the people I would like to be able to have the resources to teach people what to what is necessary in going through that process. Thirdly, I would like to talk about the classification study Senator Redding that I mentioned earlier. I think that that's a very positive step. I think that the cooperation between the executive and the legislative branches has been outstanding. I think we all agree that we are our present system is inadequate and that we're looking towards a more equitable system.
And may I aware this study doing what?
This will be the classification study center for which we received legislative approval for funds last year.
But what will the study be what will it accomplish? Will this deal only with equal pay for comparable work, or will this cover let's say job descriptions and the qualifications?
It will cover the complete thing. And the RFP was let earlier this month, and we're accepting proposals at this time. And we anticipate that the first data collection will occur in June.
I wonder if you could, I'd just like to make an observation on this yellow sheet on the local preference hires.
Yes,
4 or 5 years ago, I can't remember the exact time we started using native organizations. They took over administering health and social services, and a lot of the state programs within the Bush area themselves. And those people who were state employees went to WMATA and the rest of those people. So actually, I think if there was some way you could figure it out there, you would see that you do have a larger number of rural hires than normal. Than they did have shown, simply because of all these people who are good share, 75-80% of them, were working for the state. And now, in all truth, they are working for the state because they're being subsidized and paid for by the state grants. So they really are state employees when it comes down to it. States, I think the state supported the insurance. I think it would improve your figures a lot.
I'm not allowed to count this.
If you have an addendum and say these people are working for NATA and the colleagues, as they call them, and as such, if you were to count these, it would show this percentage. You see, I mean, it would help people understand their
income.
Yeah, I'd like to know what the court specifically told us, and we couldn't have a test for like information officers or disaster operations specialists, directional superintendents.
There's been no court case. There's been no case filed against us. It's my judgment that for us to continue to use non-validated tests merely extends our liability. Possible suit. There are plenty of precedential cases.
Okay. So it's a judgment call.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Frank. Well, picking you against some other
we saw it on the list.
You saw it on the list,
right? Thank you.
resolved. As Commissioner Rudd indicated earlier, I've been Deputy Commissioner Andrews that I've just been on board for 4 months, and the Division of EDO, there's a great deal of interest there. Some of the major issues, if I may, that were brought out in the legislative body, in which I have worked rather expeditiously in trying to resolve, was one issue with respect to the state government's affirmative action plan. As you might be aware, in the last few years, each department in the executive branch was required to put together their own affirmative action plan, which turned into a small nightmare for them, basically because they were not familiar with EDO regulations and they didn't have the expertise. My division is now moving at a jackrabbit pace, let me say, and putting together one plan for state government. So we'll have one affirmative action plan for the executive branch of state government, and the division of EDO will prepare that plan. And that will go a long way in reducing some of the problems that we had in assembling the affirmative action plan and meeting deadlines. The second issue that we dealt with, and we're in a draft sort of posture with that now, is the internal complaints procedure. The legislative report indicated that employees within the executive branch of state government didn't have a mechanism whereby they could seek redress for alleged discrimination complaints. My complaints program manager has drafted a set of procedures. We forwarded those drafts out to each. And that was the expanded certification program. I certainly agree that when I came on board and I reviewed that process, I saw that there was a great deal of duplication of effort. It was too complex, right? It doesn't have to require that hiring authorities take 20 to 30 hours and just working on it in steps to go through. So myself and Director Ray did get together with some of the personnel officers and we improved that system. Certainly, we streamlined it. Now it's simplified, and the hiring
administration